Hey, it's time for another in the series Faith in Media. Today we want to welcome Joy Selipak. Joy is with Fox 13. He's been the weather guy there for...
Wow, going on 15.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, 12 to 15, somewhere in there.
That's incredible.
It's a long run.
You're the first person I've interviewed so far that you're homegrown. Memphis is where you grew up.
Right.
You went to Raleigh Egypt High School.
Yeah.
University of Memphis, a degree in journalism. So did you want to be a weather guy?
I didn't know, actually. I got the degree in journalism from Memphis and then fell into TV news. The Lord just sort of opened that door. And I learned, much like most people do, when you're hands-on what you like. And he just led me down that road. And so I went back to school through Mississippi State to get all of the classes and accreditation I needed to become a meteorologist. So this is a little bit of nerd speak, but most meteorologists have one of several seals. And so to get that seal, you have to have a certain amount of classes, and then you have to go through testing and ongoing continuing education units. So there's a lot of schoolwork. So here's the short version. I went to school long enough, Byron, to be a doctor, but I'm a weatherman.
So really, being certified is a big deal.
Yeah.
And I guess as you look for jobs in this market, this kind of work, you've got to be certified.
Well, in days of old, a lot of older listeners grew up with trusted weather people, but they hadn't studied the science behind it. Now, that doesn't mean they still couldn't learn things on the go. And keep in mind, we've gone light years in how we learn now with the internet and whatnot. But today, being certified is pretty critical because viewers and listeners are so much more discerning. They have so much more information at their fingertips. And here's the bottom line. Through knowledge, through my learning and having gone through classes, I honestly have a better way to communicate what my ideas are. You've got to know what you're talking about to be able to communicate to a viewer. And the bottom line is this, from a TV meteorologist, a broadcast meteorologist, I can have all the greatest data in the world, but if I cannot communicate it to you effectively, I'm worthless.
Yeah.
So I've got to be able to communicate the concepts and the warnings and motivate you to make wise decisions. So it's kind of a blend.
Well, really the big question here is, where is your allegiance? I mean, you went to Memphis, but you went to Mississippi State too. So are you a Bulldogs fan or a Tiger fan?
Memphis Tigers.
Okay.
Did you notice there was no hesitation there?
I'm glad.
I mean, I like State. Don't get me wrong. Great school. But in fact, my daughter may be going there soon. We're on that college hunt right now.
I've got a nephew just graduated from State. I got a niece that's there now, another niece that will be attending.
It's a great school.
Oh, yeah, it's a great school. But nothing like being a Tiger fan.
No, my daddy played football for the Tigers in the 60s. I'm true blue.
So what was life like growing up in the Selipak home? Where did you grow up? What area of town did you grow up in?
Raleigh-Fraser.
Yeah.
Single-parent home. Parents divorced when I was young. I was blessed. Most people bemoan growing up in a divorced home, and that does cause issues, being in a split home. But the Lord blessed me and gave me a mother and grandparents who were solid Christians in their walk, some of the best Christians I know. And I love my dad, too. He knows the Lord, and we've got a great relationship. But growing up here in Raleigh-Fraser in a single-parent home with a mother who didn't get equal wages, we grew up tough. It was a tough way to grow up. I don't talk about it much, but she loved God. She normally played the piano in every church we went to. My granddaddy was a deacon who mowed the grass and kept the church running wherever they went. And so that's the environment I grew up in. So I was blessed.
Did you hang out at the Raleigh Springs Mall?
All the time.
Milano's Pizza?
All the time. I have more Milano's Pizza memories than you would believe. In fact, one of my best friends growing up, when he got married to one of our friends coming out of high school, that's where he told us. He took us all to Milano's in the Raleigh Springs Mall to tell us he was getting married.
That's great. What was your favorite and least favorite subject in school?
You know what's funny about me, Byron, is I don't dwell a lot on the past. Sometimes I even have trouble remembering things from high school. It's the way my brain puts information into slots. Maybe I need to defrag my hard drive. Nothing jumps out at me. I will say I was terrible at chemistry, AP chemistry, any kind of chemistry. Science like that at the moment didn't connect with me, which is interesting because I love it now and so much more of it appeals to me now. And I wasn't good at math, but ironically, I use math every day in my probabilities. So the things I was really terrible at, interestingly enough, I found new ways to love those fields and to use them. Kind of interesting.
That's great.
Yeah.
Tell me about the Alaskan cannery.
Yeah.
You spent a summer there.
I did. After graduating from Memphis, I wanted an adventure. And so Greyhound was running a special. This is how old I am.
You took the bus?
$79 one-way ticket anywhere in the country. It was a great mistake. It was a huge error.
Is this a solo flight?
3-day trip from the Greyhound station in downtown Memphis.
By yourself?
By myself to Seattle, Washington. 3 days. We went up to Chicago and over. We could fill an hour just me telling you about that bus ride alone. So I get to Seattle. I hooked up with a company. They actually advertised in the Memphis State Helmsman. And I had seen the ad, contacted them. This is back before email. I had to write them a letter. They hired me. I had to send a resume. Floated me up to Alaska on this giant food processing ship. And so we were docked in Alaska. And we worked on land and on the ship back and forth. And then after the summer, came back to Memphis. It was a life-changing experience.
So what was your specific job detail?
There were several. One of which I had to slide down into the hold of the ships coming in from the ocean, you know, like you see on the TV.
Yeah.
Go down in the hold and vacuum up the fish. Another one was sorting the fish wearing a full rubber suit with like a hoe. This is no joke. One was cleaning the fish with a spoon. They have this automated line. None of these were glamorous. None of these were great jobs. It made me know that's not what I wanted to do with my life.
Yeah, but what an experience.
It was.
There's not many people that can say they rode a Greyhound bus to Alaska.
It survived.
To work at a cannery, you know?
No.
You talked about your folks separated, divorce. Was that pretty tough for you?
Yeah. Yeah. They divorced when I was 5, and I can still, while I can't remember things about high school, I remember that moment when my dad left, and we were able to stay in touch over the years and visit. But, you know, that's tough for any kid. I'm a believer that when possible, you should have a godly two-parent home. But I'm also a believer that God can overcome even those types of things. And he works them all out for his good. I mean, I look back and I see benefits of maybe a divorced family, strengths that were developed, things you can't see at the moment, you can pick up later.
It's so true. I remember when my parents divorced and they separated for the first time. And I remember Dad leaving us. That was a tough thing. As you say, I see some similarities in our stories, but God is sufficient and he does guide along. At that point, you said your mom was playing in churches. Did you have faith in Christ at that time? Or when did you discover the absolute authority of Jesus and the need for him in your life?
My grandfather, who was a phenomenal man, we had bought some land, raw mountain land in East Arkansas. He was a big father figure for me. So one summer, he said, let's go out there. We're going to clear that land. It was just all wild. At the top of a dirt road on the top of a mountain with access to the White River and a mountain-fed creek on their property. It's all wilderness. So we went out there and camped out for about a week or two, sleeping in the back of a pickup truck or in a tent, cooking our own food. And every night, we would go down to the creek to wash our dishes, get fresh water, because it was a pure mountain stream. He was just such a godly man. He was one of those guys who went through correspondence, learning the entire Bible, just very knowledgeable. And I was led to Christ in that mountain stream in Arkansas. I mean, I remember when he, just over a week of us just talking, he would explain it to me, and the Lord just gripped my heart. And so I learned, I was saved at a very young age.
How old were you?
Oh, man. I wish he was still alive so he could help verify. 10, maybe.
Yeah.
And I remember as I grew older, I did not have the infrastructure in place to nurture me like I can see now. The church I go to, one of our phrases is, you know, we need to be maturing Christians. And I see that being played out in me daily. I'm daily reminded of how little I know and how much I need to learn. I think back to that young kid going through those teenage years, all the questions I had about being a Christian and your walk and can you lose your faith and what does this mean? I wish I could go back and help him as I'm still continuing to learn. So it's an ongoing process.
What a great relationship. The power of your grandfather, how that ignited you to seek Christ. You know, that's pretty exciting. Were there others besides your grandpa that you looked up to, want to mentor and learn from?
You know, we were really family-based. Even though you can have a divorce in your family, you can still have strong family. I looked up to my mother growing up. My stepdad's a great guy as well. And my grandparents. So honestly, it was family. And God would place in my path different youth leaders. I pray this for my children. I pray, A, that sin would make them physically ill. And I pray that God will place Christian friends and mentors in their life. I'm assuming that was prayed for me. I don't know that. But as I look back over my life, there were key moments where I had influences, no matter which church we were attending, maybe a youth leader, maybe a friend who gave me good advice. I didn't run with bad crowds. Thank the Lord. I was favored in that way that I didn't fall into a bad crowd. But I wonder now if maybe that was prayed over me like I'm praying it for my children. So hindsight's 20/20. But
you know, there's something to say about those prayers.
Right. Listen, I don't take that lightly. I have a bit of an issue whenever there's a tragedy and you hear a very rote, sort of thin comment, our thoughts and prayers are with you. And now I've noticed more and more people are taking God out of that. Our thoughts are with you. I don't take that lightly at all. I think if somebody says, my thoughts and prayers are with you, hey, you better be committed to praying for that person. And if you say it to me, I covet that, you know, and I need that. My whole family needs that.
Thinking about parenting, I was taking my granddaughter. I've got a granddaughter now. I've got another one on the way.
Congratulations.
But I like to take, thank you. Well, she's awesome. She's great. That's my new calling in life, to be a grandparent. Recently, I took her to Shelby Farms playground. I was watching her interact with the slide and come down and other kids that would jump in front of her when it was actually her turn to go. She was very polite. But what was really making me upset is the fact that the parents of these kids weren't doing anything about it. Most of them were just hanging back on their cell phones. Really disturbing when a parent doesn't take responsibility to help teach and guide. That's a teaching moment for a parent. We've got to take those, whether you're a parent, a grandparent, we've got to use opportunities like that so that we can learn how to treat other people. One reason why we're in a mess we are in today about how we treat people.
I'm sitting here going through that in my head as you're saying that and thinking my reaction would immediately be anger at those parents. Why don't you parent the way I do? And then my second tier thought is, wow, I need to gauge my own emotions toward this parent, even though I'm angry. And even though you're not teaching your child the right way, I don't want my response to push you further away from God. And I'm talking about me, because I've been in that situation so many times with three kids and thinking, why don't other parents? And then I go to the next level and go, okay, I want them to understand what I think is truth and how to be a good parent. But now I've got to think, okay, how do I approach them? It becomes a complicated, listen, man, being a Christian, walking that path is a complicated path. Ripple after ripple of things that you've just got to make sure you're always pointed towards truth so you don't tumble into something, even thinking you are righteously. So how many times have you heard yourself or your spouse give into what they think is righteous indignation? They think they've got the moral high ground.
Right.
But it still can lead you to somewhere you don't need to be. It's tricky. You know, when you start weighing yourself by how Christ would have responded or what you're supposed to do, you've really got to be on your toes. Man, Satan's after you all the time.
Boy, I totally agree with that. Appreciate you bringing that up, because it's easy to do, try to remove the speck out of someone else's eye when you've got a telephone pole in your eye.
Just said that to my kids this week several times.
Okay, you mentioned you've been at Fox 13 now for 15 years. Now, you've switched to the mornings. You were doing evenings.
I'm back on evenings now.
Oh, you're back on evenings.
Yeah. We had a little bit of a switchover. So I've been back on nights now. This is going to surprise you. About 2 years. Yeah.
Has it been that long?
Been that long. And listen, I understand people in TV. TV news is a very fluid industry. You've got four or five stations in this city alone. You know, we're putting on, I think, 12 plus hours of news a day. I don't think people realize how many hours of news Fox puts on the air a day. Our morning show alone is 5.5 hours every morning. It's a 5.5 hour show every morning, and then we go for the rest of the day. So it's a very fluid situation, and news people often come and go at the blink of an eye. You'll look around and go, wait a minute, what happened to that person I liked? That happens all the time. So been on evenings for a while now.
What about the adjustments? I mean, as a family, too, because your job is very demanding, trying to keep up with a balance. You got three kids, as you mentioned. You want to spend time with Lisa, spend time with the kids. How do you balance all that, especially working evenings when they're out of school now?
It's one of the biggest struggles we face, quite honestly. I have spent many hours talking to the Lord, asking him, is this where I'm supposed to be? Because I believe in family, and it is tough. That's my number one struggle, is making sure I find time with her and them. And I'm, you know, like you said, they get older. You're a grandparent. Mine are about starting to leave the house. I'm going to lose them as adults. So it's very, very difficult. I have to work weeks, sometimes, and months in advance, planning, trying to spend time when they're available. It's tricky.
As a family, has there been something you really had to cry out to God for?
Yeah.
Some real difficulty you've gone through together?
Yeah, we all do. I know everybody does, has those moments and those conflicts. And they're generally for men, because we want to protect and nurture and take care of our family and fix. Those things are usually around health or money. Those are the big targets for a marriage when you have family and wife and children. It's, your health of somebody, money or financial issues. As a provider, as a man, I can think back on those occasions, Byron, I mean, quite frequently. I mean, people sometimes don't understand television news or TV in general. It's a difficult business. Very fluid, like I mentioned earlier. There's a lot of turnover, a lot of uncertainty. It's not like the old days when you could go work for IBM and in 40 years get your gold watch and you retire. It's not like that at all. And so when you're raising a family, get a rolling contract that's up every 2 to 5 years, it's a lot of stress because how am I going to provide for my family? So I will say this. I think that's a great question. In those moments of looking for guidance, what am I supposed to do? Or, you know, we've got a health scare. We've had, you know, everybody's had those in their family. Forces you. I've been thinking more and more about this. It forces you to turn it all over to God day by day. And I believe more and more now, maybe than ever, that's one of the reasons he sends those things our way or allows them to come our way, because it takes the focus off the me trying to manage my own life and forces me to go, I can't do all this. I've got to rely on you every day. I can't say, now this week is mine, but next week, Lord, I'm going to give it up to you. The more and more those things come my way, the more and more I'm convinced it's God's way of saying, look at me, count on me, trust in me. I've gotten to the point lately where I've been going, please, Lord, help me get it so I don't need that anymore.
Oh, that's so good. Your interest in bow ties. You're not wearing a bow tie on TV now. Was that taken away from you?
It's a bit of a complicated story.
Don't have to go into details.
You can see by the way I'm stammering. I still love bow ties. I still wear them to church quite often, and it's a look that I think is fantastic. The short version is this. We have new ownership that is extremely smart, very research-driven ownership, and we have more data now at Fox 13 than anything I've ever seen before, and it's a highly tuned machine.
Yeah.
And that's good. That's good for the public because our product continues to get better and better. One of the things we learned is that the bow tie was extremely popular. I mean, very popular with the public, which that's a blessing. I think one of the reasons this decision was made, and I get this, to turn a lot more of the focus instead of what I'm wearing to what I'm doing, so that the focus can be on me studying those forecasts, me looking at the atmosphere, and me telling you how it's going to impact your life. In my heart, I still hope to see a day where those two things can coexist, you know.
And so you actually tie these?
All my bow ties are hand tied.
Okay.
Yeah.
How early in life did you start doing that? Because when I was a kid, my mom just put the little clip-ons.
You know, honestly, I used to work with Brian Teglin, an old Memphis weather guy.
I remember Brian.
Brian was a great guy. He has passed away. But Brian and I were in the room together. You know, I was just an ambiguous white guy in TV news. Hard to pick me out of a crowd. There's a million of us. And I remember looking at Brian and going, you know, I love the way bow ties look. Nobody's wearing them. This has got to be 25 years ago. And he was like, huh? Because they were expensive too. You know, they weren't like a normal tie because you couldn't find them. Man, if I can ever afford it, I'm going to start wearing those. And I just started saving up and started wearing them. And it just sort of snowballed. I love the look. I think it's a classic look.
What's the most crazy or unusual thing that's happened to you when you were doing live TV?
Oh, my goodness. That's a hard one to answer. I'd have to think back. Nothing is just jumping out at me. Live TV in Memphis, what you really have to be most on guard for is other Memphians, to be quite honest. Yeah. I've been doing this long enough time now that I've been a reporter as well as meteorologist, sort of wearing many hats. Quite often we'll be in the field. I've been on a scene where shooting breaks out while you're live. That's tricky. That's probably one of the most difficult things to deal with because you're on the scene of something and trouble goes down, or, you know, you have a very emotional crowd around you. That happens quite often in TV news where you're reporting on something, you're there at the scene and you have an emotional crowd. They honestly will take their anger out on anything. And so you can very quickly become the subject of the emotion of the crowd. So something that just jumps into my head is our coverage of the protest over the bridge a year or so ago. I mean, that was unfolding in real time. We had reporters there. It got to the point where it could be very dangerous. We're in a very dangerous emotional time right now in the nation. So honestly, I mean, I've had a million little things go wrong, but as far as live shots go, right now we're at such a flashpoint from both sides, far left, far right, doing anything live. The news media in general is not liked very well by either side. So that's a tricky question, and our people have to be on their guard.
It's seem like there's a real disconnect with the public and the media public not really trusting the media. Is the media really giving me the facts, the truth, and the story? Or are they just trying to shape what they want me to believe?
You know, I was just thinking about that today because of something happening close to me with someone else in the media, someone who's kind of young. And this is my opinion. What you're going to hear next is just my opinion. I've been doing this for a long time. I've seen some great reporters. And the best reporters I've seen locally are the ones that when they reported, I had no idea what their opinion was. None. And I'm talking about some long-term people. They have since retired. But when they reported, you had no clue where they leaned. And I long for that in news. What gets a lot of attention in press, quite honestly, are opinionated people on both sides. Because you are, by nature, and I and everybody, you're by nature drawn to people who think like you. And then you sort of start thinking, everybody thinks this way. But we've got two very different opinions, in most cases, on two different sides, if you're thinking Democrat, Republican, or left, right. And I think you have to be objective in TV news. And the problem I'm seeing now, is especially with millennials, younger kids that are coming up, they have a different set of values. The world is changing, especially with social media. That's a monster in the room. So you're seeing a lot of kids now that are going into TV news who are extremely opinionated and unfortunately haven't been taught or bought into that. What I'm thinking, my idea, my opinion, be objective. Have your opinion, but as a news source, be so down the middle, you're just reporting. I think that's where we need to be. I think if we get to there, maybe the public buys back into the media.
Has there been a specific story that stands out to you as you do your job that you know that someone really benefited, did something to change their life as a result of what you do on television? We have these storms that come into the area all the time. Some of them can be quite fierce, tornadoes. I know people cover for their life, and I know you guys preempt sometimes people's favorite television show, and people wonder, why are they doing this, you know? But, I mean, really, it's a life matter sometimes, and you guys report that.
Yeah, let me say this. I came across a study. I just did some research into it. Another professor did all the heavy lifting. Memphis, Byron, has more tornadic fatalities than anywhere else in the country. I'm going to say that again. Memphis is the bullseye for more tornado deaths than anywhere in the country over a long period of time. This is a study out of Northern Illinois University. We don't get more tornadoes. We have more people die here. And Memphis is in the center of a tri-colored bullseye. When I looked at that, I was stunned. And I called this professor and I said, explain this to me. How your research has showed we have more people die here. He said, well, there's three primary reasons. We have lower economic situation here. So we have no basements. Most of our storms here that are deadly arrive after dark when people are going to bed and not paying attention. Third, we have a huge number of mobile homes. It's like tissue paper in that kind of situation. Those three components and some other things contribute to the fact that I read that and I thought, I'm the chief meteorologist at a TV station in the bullseye for tornadic deaths. I take that so seriously. I take it so seriously. And I'm dealing with a public that, quite honestly, we've done the research. I usually only get a fraction of their attention. People halfway listen to TV news. And so as I'm saying things, I'm trying to get your attention and tell you critical things. I realize I've only got a part of your attention. So let's go to something like the remnants of Harvey that just came through here. This is just a few days ago. We had this catastrophic flooding in Houston. You've been doing great work with the people down there trying to forward ways to help. And everybody now, I had their attention because all they heard was Houston flooding. And now it's coming our way. So now I'm getting inundated with emails and messages and social media. Do I need to leave the city? Do I need to get my mother out of a nursing home? Very personal, intimate. It was sort of heartbreaking that people had a lot of disinformation. My job quickly became, how do I tell them exactly what to expect? So to answer your question, this past event, which I guess was this past weekend when Harvey came through here, I had one woman email me and say, we were on for 6.5 hours that day straight. We went on the air at 12:30 noon around there. We had 30 tornado warnings at one point as Harvey was coming through. It was a ridiculous day. I started broadcasting at 12:30 noon, and I stopped talking at 6:30 that night and had to get ready for the next evening news. Someone contacted me later, an older woman, and said, I just want to say thank you because my sister is here with broken ribs. I think she said she came up from Harvey and had been injured. And we listened to every word you guys said, trying to decide, do I need to figure out a way to pick her up and get her out of my home? Now, To the jaded individual, they may go, that doesn't affect me. That's great. But to answer your question, that requires real compassion, man. There are people out there hurting and scared, and weather terrifies them. So I take that so seriously. Yeah, I met those kids at weather camp. Same thing. Kids that cry during storm drills. And we have adults who are terrified. The latest example I had was the remnants of Harvey coming through here. And people that are locked in their homes, terrified of wondering what the weather is going to do. So I pray this every time. There, very few people know this. I pray before every storm, just asking the Lord to please spare the Mid-South. And then every time the camera comes on me, every single time I hear that opening and the camera's about to come on, I look at the camera and I just sing a very small phrase of one of my favorite songs. I just say, more of thee and less of me. Trying to put it all on God, speak through me, and may I be able to take away some fear. Who wants to be scared? So I take that seriously, and I think it's a great question. And there are more scared people out there, whether it's weather or maybe it's finances or whatever. They're scared. And if I can help ease that a little bit on the weather part, man, maybe that's why I'm here.
What are your favorite places to hang out in Memphis? Where do you like to eat? What do you like best about the city?
I love the people of Memphis. I do. Growing up here, I have a real heart for Memphis. We've had opportunities to go to other cities, and the Lord has not steered me there. I do have a passion for this city. People are basically helpful here and kind heart. There's a lot of bad everywhere, don't get me wrong, but people here smile and are thoughtful, want to look out for each other. What do I like to do? Anything with my wife that I can just spend some time. We had a date night this weekend for the first time. We just said, we're going to go do something. Had no plans. I think it was Saturday night, maybe. So here's what we did. We just got in the car, made sure the kids were okay, drove down to the new Big River crossing over the South Bridge, and just walked across it. We didn't go all the way across. We both dressed up. She wanted to look and feel nice because she's been a mom and working. And we just walked across and looked at the sunset and took some photographs and talked. And then we went and found, we drove around and found a restaurant downtown and just pulled in. That kind of thing to me, I love. I love little Memphis holes in the wall that are just true blue and getting to talk to people. And honestly, what do I love to do? I love to exercise. I don't get to do enough of it. That helps me kind of my therapy. Things I can do to spend time with my wife and kids. Last night, Byron, I was able to sit down with all my kids. I grilled hamburgers. We all sat down. I had a night off. I had somebody that was kind enough to cover for me. And I had everybody at the table at one time just chatting. And I've heard older people say this about some of their favorite memories. I remember last night just looking around going, this makes me very happy. We're all here at the moment together.
Joey Salopet, thank you so much for being on Faith in Media. I appreciate you so much. Always good to hang out with you.
Byron, great talking to you.
Friends, thanks for tuning in on this edition of Faith in Media. We've got more coming. Stay tuned to AM 640 and FM 100.7.